The world entirely is at war.
Troops waiting for the zero hour.
This is D-Day.
They got one.
Veterans Chronicles. For the next hour, join host Gene Pell and an honored roster of heroic soldiers, sailors, and fighting aviators, recalling and retelling their personal stories from World War II,
a state of war,
to the present day.
Allied air forces began an attack on military targets in Iraq and Kuwait.
Now the American Veterans Center and the Radio America Network present Veterans Chronicles with your host, Gene Pell.
Welcome to this week's edition of Veterans Chronicles. My guests this week are William Wild Bill Guarnier and Edward Babe Heffron, two members of the Band of Brothers, immortalized in the book by Stephen Ambrose and the television series produced by Tom Hanks and shown on HBO. Wild Bill and Babe are the co-authors, along with journalist Robin Post, of a new book titled Brothers in Battle, Best of Friends, in which the two World War II paratroopers tell their stories. They were born only 18 days and a few blocks apart in South Philadelphia, but they never met until several years later when both were in the East Company of the 101st Airborne Division in Europe. They have been virtually inseparable since. Well, let's start, gentlemen, with the South Philly in the late 30s. You both describe a pretty wild and woolly, hard scrabble environment, especially you, Bill.
Well, yeah, don't forget, now, you came from a family of 10 kids.
Right.
A baby of 10 kids.
Well, so what did you have to do to even survive?
Well, put it this way. You learn from your brothers. You learn from his brothers and sisters all the bad things you had to do in life.
Right.
And they taught you all the bad things to survive. It was a tough life.
Well, you were on the streets a lot, even at a very early age, shooting craps and doing a whole lot of other stuff, right?
Stealing, robbing, you name it. I thought we were all going to wind up in jail when we were kids.
What about you, Babe? Did you have similar experience?
Why, sure. The same as Bill did. We used to, there was a detective, railroad detective, I can tell you that, on the railroad at Delaware Avenue. Reed, Dickerson, you name the street, we called him Duck Feet. He walked like I do now. And he was a comparatively young man. But anyhow, we used to get down with a baby carriage, steal the coal, that was out of the gondola cars, the open cars, pick it up off the ground, and take the baby's carriage back to the house. Emptied in the cellar window. The windows were all on the front of the house. We just dumped it into the bin. And if it was in the wintertime, it was, I can honestly say, it was stuff sledding without snow. We had to take a sled down and two guys pulling and one pushing, and we would get the coal home. And my mother and father, who were very, my dad, as you know, was a prison guard, and he didn't go for no nonsense, but he never hollered about us bringing the coal home. So he agreed with that, because you had to have a warm house, and he liked to eat, too. We had four of us, four brothers and one girl. The girl was the youngest, Anna Margaret. So as Bill says, it was rough. You had to go out and hustle numbers, horses, run telephone calls. If a bird was on a if a bird was called on the phone by a boyfriend, you went to her house, took her to the phone, and she handed you a nickel. A nickel was your compensation for going around. You sat on a step 3 or 4 hours a night just hoping somebody would call so you'd make that nickel and dime to take home to your mother.
Well,
you never gave Dad nothing. Everything went to mother.
Well, and a nickel was a lot.
Oh, my aching back. Yeah, you get a soda and a hot dog for like 7 cents.
Right. Well, to get away from that, or at least to help bring in more than a nickel, Bill, you are about 15. You decide to time to start thinking about the military, right?
Well, not me. I didn't think about it, but my parents and my brothers. My other two brothers went to the CCCs. A civilian conservation.
Right.
And Mom said, you want to? I said, yes. So she sent me the military. And she signed the papers. I was of age in 1938. I spent 3 years in the CMTCs, military training, Fort Meade, Maryland.
So that was, you started in 38 and...
39 and 40, then the war broke out in 41.
And where were you in December of 41?
Well, I was on the corner. On the corner, not doing a damn thing.
Well, but did the word get around very fast, or did anybody even know where Pearl Harbor was?
Nobody knew what they were talking about.
No.
We were very illiterate back then. Nobody knew a damn thing. Not like it is today. Nobody knew what the hell was going on anyway.
What about you, babe? Where were you when the war started?
Where was I? I'll tell you. I was down in Old Man Marcus' candy store. We had a dance hall that we made up. Hardwood floors and the electrical work we did ourselves. We were like 17 years old. And the girls that used to go dancing, they would come from three different churches, St. Monica's, Our Lady of Mount Carmel, and Sacred Heart. And we used to have dances every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You paid a dime to get in. And we had a jukebox we went out and hired. And in time, we ended up buying one. But it was a dime a dance. And the girls from all over the city, as far as 28th Street, 30th Street, they would come down on 2 Street where we had the dances at 2nd and Wharton, right above the garage. We ran it off of him for $5 a month. And the kid that did it all was a kid named Sam Prani. He got banged up pretty good in the 508 Parachute Infantry. He was from 4th and Wharton. And he used to come over and play football with us. We played football up until we were around in our 30s. And he was right there with me all the lungs he had. He just loved football. And him and I played side by side. He was a tackle and I was a running guard. And it was something. But I was at 2nd and Wharton having a Pepsi. Pepsi was a new soda at the time. You can check it out. It's true. And I was in drinking. And Old Man Marcus said to me, "Babe, make that last a while." I said, "What's the matter?" He said, "The Japanese just bombed Pearl Harbor." And I said, "Where the hell's Pearl Harbor?" And he said, "Somewhere in the Pacific." And then I went up to the dance hall. I pulled the jukebox cord out. And I said, "Fellas, girls, there'll be no more dancing today. We all know what we have to do. The Japanese just bombed Pearl Harbor." And in unison, they said, "Where the hell's Pearl Harbor?" So I said, "Somewhere in the Pacific," I was told. And we went up to the custom house. There must have been 10 or 12 of us. And we went up there. It was packed. You couldn't even, honest to God, the mines run all the way out Market, all the way out Chestnut. If you know where the custom house is at 2nd Street, then you know what it's all about, how it could be pictured in your mind. The gang of kids that were up there trying to enlist.
Right.
And the guy came out around 7 p.m. He said, "We got our quota. We can't take no more. We have to go home, too. And so, therefore, come back tomorrow." So that was where I was at Pearl Harbor.
Well, Bill, you were already in the military. And so where did they send you next?
Well, no. I didn't say a word about my military training because I was young. I figured me and Mom would go to jail. Back then, I was kind of afraid, so I waited. I went to work making tanks. I went to work my Baldwin locomotive making the tanks for the Army.
Right.
Then I enlisted in the paratroopers in 1942.
So by that time, you were what, 18?
18, yeah.
Right.
But they were close to 19, yeah.
Well, the paratroopers were brand new back then.
Yeah, that's true. I seen a big difference.
Oh, did you?
I was going to join the Marine Corps because I figured they were about the best around the Marine Corps.
Right.
When I seen the post, I said, "Let me see what it's about." And sure enough, I enlisted in paratrooper. Yeah, I'm glad I did.
So, did you have any idea what you were getting into?
Absolutely none. None whatsoever.
Okay. And when did you sign up, babe?
I enlisted in August. They called me in November of 42. And it was a while waiting, so I had to bring money home to my mother, of course. As I said, Dad didn't get nothing. I wouldn't offer him nothing. But My mother got the money. I was getting $88 a week for 7 days a week out of sandblasting the ships they were converting into carriers, and I did the ballast down below the waterline, you know, on a ship, and
right.
sandblasted it.
Right.
And it was a good job waiting to be called, and when I was going out of work one day, then one of the supervisors of the company I worked for was called Metal Weld, and I was walking out, and he said, "Yo, babe, I want to talk to you a minute." I said, "Oh, what's it all about?" He said, "Yeah, you're classified 2B. I said, "What's that mean?" He said, "Well, they have a funny saying, it's 2B when you're here and 2B when they come back." I said, "Well, that ain't me. I can't do that." He said, "Well, we need you. You're short. You can get into them tanks real easy." And I said, "No, that's not me. I'm waiting to be called." He said, "Well, we can cancel that." I said, no, don't do that. And I ripped the piece of paper up he gave me, and that was my baptism of going in. I finally got called early November, the first week in November I got called to go in, and I went in. That's that simple.
Where did they send you?
Fort Eustis, Virginia.
Yeah.
And I had my papers in about the airborne. And I don't know why, maybe somebody threw them in the trash can or something in the Army, and they finally called me a few months later, and I was down at Fort Eustis teaching OCS, Officers Candidate School, 50s and 30s, and the Beaufort 40 millimeter.
We're going to take a short break here.
Go ahead.
And we'll come back and continue our conversation with the Wild Bill Guarnier and Babe Heffron, two members of the original Band of Brothers, here on the Radio America Network.
World War II.
The German news agency said today in a broadcast that the Allied invasion had begun.
Korea.
The armed invasion of the Republic of Korea by armed forces from Northern Korea constituted a breach of the peace.
Vietnam.
The curfew is in effect for the Saigon, Cholon, Jiezhen area.
The Gulf War.
The skies over Baghdad have been illuminated. Bright flashes going off all over the sky.
A special thanks to veterans everywhere from the Radio America Network. Veterans Chronicle. Is now available wherever you are through your MP3 player. Log on to www.radioamerica.org and click on the podcasting icon. Look for Veterans Chronicles. Then follow the information on your screen to subscribe to our podcast. You can also find the Veterans Chronicles podcast on Apple iTunes. The Veterans Chronicles podcast, now online at radioamerica.org.
You're listening to Veterans Chronicles, presented by the American Veterans Center and the Radio America Network.
Welcome back to Veterans Chronicles. I'm Gene Pell. My guests this week are William Wild Bill Guarnier and Edward Babe Heffron, two members of the Band of Brothers and author of the new book about their experiences as paratroopers in World War II. Brothers in Battle, Best of Friends is the title of the book. Well, we got you into the service before the break, and so now that you're in, it is, as you write, training. Nothing more than training forever, it seems like. Is that right, Bill?
That's correct. We wound up with that Captain Herbert Serval.
Well, I'm intrigued about him.
He was about the best training officer we ever saw, a good training officer.
Well, you did not want to be led into battle by him. I know that.
Well, during the course of your training with him, his philosophy of training was excellent, but his philosophy of combat was, it gets you killed. It would get you killed. So everyone knew it, though.
Well, finally, there was enough of a rebellion, I gather, from the book that...
you call it rebellion. We call it a mutiny.
Yeah,
we got away with murder back then.
I was trying to be kind.
Yeah, I was trying to be kind, Bill. That's right.
You wind up in Alcatraz. You had done it today.
Now, I understand that. I said I was trying to be kind I know what it was. But then you got some good leadership in there. It's funny that the two of you should come from that close by and never have met before. And here you are both now in the Army getting ready to go to war.
Stranger than fiction.
Yeah.
Okay. True.
Yes, true. So, when did you take off for Europe then, Bill?
We left for Europe in September 1943.
And you were going on your way to England?
England, that's right. So all born in England, that's right.
And more and more and more and more training.
More and more training for D-Day, yep.
And when did you follow across the ocean, babe?
It was the latter part of May, and we got there right at D-Day, and that's why I have a battle star for D-Day, because I was with the unit, not fighting, but with the unit in England until they come back. And they give you that, you know, they can't give you the arrowhead for the wings because you didn't make the jump. But I was there when they come back, and I was at regimental headquarters, and they transferred us down to Easy Company, and that's where I met Bill.
Bill, you did jump into Normandy
at
the time. Tell us about what that was like.
Well, actually, when we jumped into Normandy, I guess you heard the story about my brother Henry got killed in Italy. I never knew about that until right before the D-Day jump. And when that hit me, it was like hit me with a brick.
Right.
Oh, man, was I P.O.? Well, man, oh, man, was I like a crazy man. And you didn't want to be a German when you met me on D-Day. I was crazy in a bedbug.
Right.
And I thought I'd get killed for sure.
What was it like when you hit the ground?
Like a murderer, just like a killer.
Yeah.
I was just like a crazy killer.
What was the situation like when you hit the ground in terms of German defense?
I landed in St. Mary Gleason. Have you seen that show about the longest day?
I have, and I have been to St. Mary Gleason.
Okay, you see that where Bob Steele is hanging on that church steeple?
Yep, I know it very well.
I landed about 400 or 500 yards away from that, right in that square, St. Mary Gleason, right before D-Day. I mean, on D-Day.
Because right.
That was the 82nd Airborne Division landing place. We landed there before the 82nd Airborne.
What was your mission?
Our mission was, we had to get the troops in on the 4th Division coming in on near Poppyville. Get them in off the causeway.
Mm-hmm.
Get them in safely. The troops from D.C. coming in.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you landed, were you near your original scheduled drop zone? Or
No way. No
way. That's what I thought.
No.
And your outfit was pretty well scattered around.
I would say the whole damn thing was all messed up, which was good and bad. It had good points and it had bad points, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What were the good points?
Well, the good points, the Germans didn't look around anyway. The Germans, they just as scared as we were. They didn't know where the hell we were at. We didn't know where they were at.
Yeah, and I guess
so they... Catch can in the day, yeah.
Yeah, and they didn't even know how many of you there were, probably.
True, that's true, yeah.
After you've accomplished that mission, you were over there for how long?
We left there July, the second week in July, July 14th, I think.
And went back to England?
Went back to England for the next jump will be August. We're supposed to jump in Paris in August, 1944.
Tell me, babe, about that first meeting that you had with Bill.
Well, Captain Winter, well, he was a lieutenant. Lieutenant Winter said he was the first lieutenant. He had just gotten promoted, I guess. Harry said to me, Efren, where are you from? I said, Pennsylvania. He said, that's where I'm from. And he said, I got a guy to you over there in the barracks. His name is Garnier. He said to me first, where are you from in Philadelphia? I said, South Philly. He said, I got a guy to you over there in that hut. You go over there and ask for a guy named Garnier. And I walked in and I seen him, and he said, where are you from? I said, I'm from South Philly. And I knew he was from South Philly, but he didn't know I knew. Of course, Winters told me. But anyhow, he said to me, all right, you're in the first squad, you're a machine gunner. I said, right. And I was glad of that because I taught machine guns at Fort Eustis.
All right, I'm going to stop you right there for a minute because we have to take another break, and we'll pick that up when we get back, talking with Bill Garnier and Babe Heffron from the Band of Brothers here on the Radio America Network.
Veterans Chronicles is presented by the American Veterans Center. an educational foundation dedicated toward preserving the legacy of America's servicemen and servicewomen of all generations. The center is home to two organizations, the World War II Veterans Committee and the National Vietnam Veterans Committee, each working to tell the stories of their respective veterans. In addition to this program, the American Veterans Center is also the primary sponsor of the National Memorial Day Parade, held annually in Washington, D.C. For more information on the American Veterans Center and its programs, visit the center's website at www.americanveteranscenter.org or call 703-302-1012, 703-302-1012.
Heavy fighting is still raging.
3,639 wounded.
Red light, green light, and out, out. Get out.
Gentlemen, this is the real thing.
The brutal death march of batons.
Germany calling. Germany calling.
Right in the Fuhrer's face.
Pass the ammunition and go home.
Each year for Harlem on parade.
You're listening to Veterans Chronicles, presented by the American Veterans Center and the Radio America Network. Once again, Gene Pell.
Welcome back to Veterans Chronicles. I'm Gene Pell, and my guests this week are Bill Guarnier and Babe Heffron of the Band of Brothers, both members of the 101st Airborne Division in Europe at D-Day and subsequent battles. And I've always thought reading about it that Operation Market Garden never seems to get the credit that it deserves because of how it was as difficult in many respects as anything, and yet it got so overshadowed by D-Day that people forget how difficult it was in Holland. Is that your experience?
Well, to me it was. I thought with all the suffering we did and the way we had to live, I thought it should have been, and we secured all our objectives, and it wasn't our fault. They dropped us about 3 or 4 miles from the Wilhelmina Canal. If they had dropped us closer, we would have secured the bridge before they blew it. And that's a fact. But I thought they wanted us for a 3 or 4 day fight. And then we would go back and get outrigged for another jump. But Montgomery wouldn't let us go. He asked Eisenhower to keep us there up on the dikes due to the fact he had nobody with the quality of the airborne to stay and hold like we did. And we were up there quite a long while, and I still say, and I think Bill Garnier will agree, that every morning we would come out of them apple orchards and open up Hell's Highway again. It got to be so bad. We're losing men, and we were up there for 70-some days, and they relieved one regiment at a time, I guess, to secure and make sure they had the covering on the dikes. But the dikes, the water was, I guess, Holland's three-quarters underwater anyhow. When you dug a hole, you hit water. And when you, no matter where you went, they said you're going to go into a barn, guys ain't going to have to live in the ground, which didn't prove to be true. We went in the barn had no roof. So you're still out of the, you're not out of the elements. So I would agree with you that I don't think it got the recognition it should have.
How do you feel about that, Bill?
Well, like Babe said, yeah, he's correct. And well, my philosophy was this. Eindhoven is the southernmost part of it.
Right.
The northernmost part of it was Arnhem. That's where the British jumped, right?
Exactly.
According to what we learned after the war was over, that the British knew about the Germans being up in Arnhem. They knew about it. They were told, and they still made the jump. It don't make sense. So my philosophy is this: from Arnhem, where do you go? The first troops are going into Germany. Who? The British.
Right.
Right.
The British should have been where we were at, and we should have been up in Arnhem.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Should have been the opposite way. I don't know. Maybe I'm dreaming.
No, I think you're right about that.
I mean, I'm not a general or nothing, but it was One hell of a mess, you know.
Well, you didn't go anywhere near where you expected after that, even, because after 70-some-odd days there, and you thought you were finally going to get some rest, next thing you know, you're on your way to one of the biggest battles of the war.
There you go. Everyone thought the war would be over by Christmas, yeah. Mm-hmm. Merry Christmas, kid.
Yeah. Well,
Merry Christmas. Not only did you not have any presents, you didn't have any ammunition, you didn't have any winter clothes, you didn't have just about anything to go into a battle like that.
We had each other. That's about it. Then that's all we needed was each other. That's all.
That's a very good point.
We had each other. That's good, Bill.
I'm glad you said that, because in the end, that was what turned the corner of everything, was
the fact you
had each other. But did you have any idea at the time of the extent of the German force and how entrapped you really were?
None whatsoever. None at all.
So there was no intel on that then?
Nothing whatsoever, no.
Right.
It caught everyone by surprise. Everyone was surprised.
Right.
Just like the same thing as Pearl Harbor.
Well, there you go.
I didn't know a damn thing.
And, of course, the weather was terrible, and it's what, about 26, 27 degrees below zero?
I would say it was cold. I would say it was cold.
And you must have been happy campers when the sun came out on Christmas Day.
That's true, yeah. Yes, it was true, yeah. We got bombed on Christmas Day by the Germans. Merry Christmas, they said. A slight bombing, but that was it.
Yeah. But you also, very shortly thereafter, had some boxes with supplies and
food and
everything else dropping out of the sky.
Yep.
And were you able to get to most of that stuff, or did some of that?
Well, we say about half and half.
Yeah.
We got half and they got half, yeah.
Right.
It was kind of tough, yeah.
Well, what did people say when they heard, I'm sure the word must have got around, that McAuliffe said to the Germans when they demanded a surrender? Nuts.
Well, like you said, we never knew the magnitude of the battle. We never knew it was that big.
Right.
It was a big battle. We weren't the only ones in that battle, but we got all the damn publicity being surrounded.
Right.
We were lucky in the sense... there was other people that fought battle just as big as we had fought. But we got the cooks. We got all that publicity back home.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what made it famous for us. And you can't deny the other people with the battle that they fought from the up north and down south, too.
Right.
So it was a big battle with a lot of people involved in it, not only us. I mean, we got the publicity on that. That's why we were so damn famous. It makes me mad in a way, too.
Mm-hmm.
I feel so ashamed in a way, you know. A lot of the kids up there were fighting just as bad as we were.
Well, it was also a question of not just a big battle. It was a very, very important battle. I mean,
we understood it after the battle was over.
Yeah.
Then we understood more about it. We never knew how big it was.
And war could have gone on a lot longer if it had gone the other way.
Thank God for that.
Yeah. Your war sort of came to an end, though, at that battle, right?
True, yeah. True. Well, at least I'm alive now. I'm alive and kicking today. I'm doing fine.
Right. But you got wounded in the leg and shipped back. And, babe, you went on to some pretty horrific sights.
You're there, and I'll tell you the truth. Bill and Joe Torre were greatly, greatly missed. Not because Bill's on the other end of this phone, but he knows how I feel about that. He was a hell of a guy, the most courageous man I ever met, him and Joe Torre and Chuck Grant. I can't say enough about them. They were the best. I don't care what unit you ever got into. These guys, they knew what they were doing. And as far as the Holland deal, I swear to God that it to me, it was just a bad thing because Montgomery wouldn't let us go, and Eisenhower concurred with him. All right, we'll leave the airborne up there a little longer, the 82nd and us, because they knew once we got out, if we're replaced, the Germans could have come over the dike, and this is what they were afraid of.
Right.
But the Battle of the Baltimore, I would have to say it was the worst because you had no clothes, no ammo, and when they dropped the K rations to us, we at least got that. And we were told after we got the K-rations, each man got 2 boxes apiece, and we were told, hold on to them because it's bad weather is supposed to be setting in, and you might have to go 2 days again without eating. So we tried to hold on, and it worked out anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
And like Bill said, there was a hell of a lot of guys up there besides us guys, and I had a tanker crew, and the TDs, 705 TD, they were great with us. They protected the road, and the tanks couldn't get by that road unless they took that TD out, and those guys held pretty firm, I have to say that.
Mm-hmm.
That's my conception.
You two have continued this friendship now for a very, very long time. Do you see or talk to each other most every day now in Philadelphia?
Absolutely, yes. I drive, but Babe don't drive. I go see him, yeah.
Yeah.
Babe never drove a car. I drive to see Babe all the time, yeah.
And have you both traveled back to some of these places where you fought?
Oh, yeah, 10 to 15 times we went back to Europe.
Oh, yeah, at least 15.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
We went back 10 to 15 times since the war's over.
And what have your impressions been when you go back?
Well, we go back and see the people that we saw during the war, even after the war. We see a lot of Dutch people, a lot of French people, English people, Belgian people. We met a lot of people since 1944 until today.
Right. Well, you get pretty good welcome every time you go over there, certainly in Holland, I know.
Oh, yeah.
Every time we go to Holland, I get in Dutch.
All right.
There you go.
You've been waiting for that to throw that in there, right?
Well, certainly.
Tell me about your experiences in the television world. You were both consultants to the producing of Band of Brothers. You were both portrayed in the series. How was that experience for you? I'll start with you, Babe, and how did you feel about the final product when it came out?
Well, I'll tell you, it was all right. I was given about a 94 or 95. They threw a couple of Hollywood jobs in there, but it was all right. It might have been a different situation, but it was the same thing. They put you in a different part of the, like Normandy, Holland, Bastogne, and Belgium. And up in Germany, they put you in a different place, but the same sort of a battle was in that area. And I guess that was the same money or whatever, but that's not our call. Our call, we did our input when they asked us, we did it. And Tom Hanks, I have to say this, and I know Bill thinks the world of him, too. He's one of the nicest men you perhaps have already met him.
And I don't know
him. He's one of the nicest men I ever seen, and people don't know, and I like to say this, the money he has donated all over the world for different monuments to the, including Washington, and his money out of his pocket to these monuments, even in Belgium, Holland, he's donated money plus the own American, you know, and New Orleans and down in Louisiana, the museum, a lot of that come out of his pocket. He's a great American, and he sure as hell loves his country.
Tom Hanks.
Go ahead, Bill. What was your experience, and what did you think of the final version?
When I got there, they all came to me. My experience was this. I knew each man in the company from Allie to Zimmerman, from A to Z. I knew the men in the company, because I ran them reunions every year for almost 60 years. So my information was about the other people in the company, not mine. Until I got with Frank Hughes, and he's the one that wanted the information about me.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like that there.
Well, what did you think about the final version of it?
I thought the final version was good, because I think they cast correctly, and it was true.
Right.
Everything there. Hanks wanted the truth, no matter whether it was good, bad, or indifferent. So he wanted the truth, and that's the way it came out. I thought it would come out, and just maybe a month or two, bing, bang, boom, and it'd be history. But it's still going on strong today.
Mm-hmm.
There's something here that people like, but I have no idea.
Well, now, you were on the set when they were doing a lot of shooting and had a chance to meet the person who actually portrayed you. From your account in the book, it sounds like he really did everything he possibly could to get himself inside your skin and your head.
That he did. That's what he did, yes.
Well, did he succeed?
I think he did. Yes, he did. He done a wonderful job.
Right. I would say yes.
I'd say yes, yeah.
And was the same true, Babe, for the person who portrayed you?
Robin Lang, yes, he did a wonderful job. A real, I'll tell you, they were over credit to the film because they all did a wonderful job. Yep, all the actors. Yes, I would have to say they did. They even talk like us.
Now, wait a minute now.
There's some good. The kid that did my part, Robin Lang. He might have talked a little softer, but he did. He had my actions anyhow.
Well, that's good stuff. Well, thanks so much for being with us. I know you've got to tell this story over and over and over and over again, and but I hope you don't get tired of telling it because it's important, and it's certainly important that the younger generation understands what happened, and if we don't learn something from that history, we may be destined to relive it. So
you know what you just said?
Hmm. Yeah.
You hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you hear what the... You said the exact same thing that Tom Hanks told us, me and Bill.
Well, I didn't know that.
Exactly the same thing, right, Bill?
You got it.
He said it's for the kids of America that you two are going to be around a long while. So,
well, thanks again to both of you.
All right, and thank you for calling us.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Coming up next, our weekly World War II Chronicle and a salute to an American military hero.